way you mess around with me, man. I tried to stick with you, show your love so true, but you won't appreciate the love we try to make.
It's a shame. Never mind. Is the key thing we'd have to share with Ian Lennox, Shaley. So you've got to bear in mind, he's going to be in a sensitive mode now, because so far Newcastle United not a single win in the season. And then last night they thought in the Karako Cup, the former English Football League Cup, they might have actually progressed against Nottingham Forest. They lost again. So it's
walk away from the ledge. Don't do it.
Well,
score
two goals.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, so
yes, better.
Yeah, precisely. You've got to celebrate that
on the league.
And would you really want it to be drawn away to Chelsea and play Chelsea in the next round? No, it's, you know. So
that's who would draw it.
You would have been actually yes drawn away. It's Nottingham Forest have been drawn away to Chelsea. You mean you
weren't? Serves them right.
You weren't up at 4 a.m. in the morning to actually get the full
sort
of
picture.
It just surprised me. Never mind. I mean, we could go into a sort of debate about the sequence, but I feel in the absence of Ben, who also shows solidarity with Newcastle United, both have got 0 points this season. Ben, of course, being a Brighton supporter, maybe we'd sort of just draw a veil over the whole thing here. I mean, it's just a thought.
You do enjoy this sort of thing, don't you?
It's not a case of enjoyment.
Sticking the knife and twisting it.
I mean, there are those of us who have to cope with the craziness of Mourinho, who's obviously got 6 points out of six as opposed to 4 out of 6 for the other side of Manchester. But, let's just move away. You know, we'll breathe in and move away and actually talk more about exercise, Ian. Do you get enough of it?
Yeah, I was listening on radio earlier this morning, and a huge amount of number of people don't even do 3 minutes of walking a day. They're doing a very minimal amount of walking.
Over 6 million adults are putting their health at risk, and we'll be speaking in a few moments to Dr. Justin Varney, the national lead for adult health from Public Health England. 4 out of 10 adults aged 40 to 60 in England walk less than 10 minutes continuously at a brisk pace. Physically,
but they do it once a month or something. That's what they do.
Physical inactivity amongst adults contributes to 1 in 6 deaths in the UK, yeah, and it's costing the NHS over £900 million a year.
That's insane.
So this is, again, part of Public Health England's new One U physical activity campaign encouraging adults to...
Statistics are suspicious of £900 million a year. If they didn't die earlier because of it, they'd be contracting other illnesses that would cost them something else. The NHS is facing... crises because we're living longer, basically.
Mm. Yeah.
So I think these people are doing a patriotic duty by refusing to walk at all.
Well, that's an interesting...
That's one point of view, isn't it?
But what about...
Not mine, actually, because I do walk quite a bit.
Well, exactly, and you're not even in that...
I'm just getting... You know, you just become bombarded with these people telling you what's good for you and what's bad for you. And this is probably a more pertinent one, actually, but there's other stuff. It's just ridiculous. People trying to turn the light off and not... It's a nanny state we're going into now, where people are telling you how to behave all the time.
Pray Thatcher.
Do not approach do not wait for the bus to stop before you do this. Oh, God.
I was very impressed in London yesterday that they actually have a countdown to tell you how many seconds you've got before the lights actually change. So certainly around the barbecue.
You've got the engine up.
Exactly. Oh. It goes to 10, 9, 8.
As if you can't wait.
They're trying to get the man with the, checkered flags in their budget so they're going to have a real racing start.
Well, it was certainly interesting. I went to chase it up with Fiona Moore when I mentioned not only that, but again, it was very difficult to find any Londoner who would actually smile yesterday at all, really. They're very, very, very focused.
It's when you accidentally walk into one and apologise and they look at you like you're a foreign alien. Yeah.
Oh, there's a great sport you can have. You can actually go to strangers and ask them the directions of somewhere.
I did that actually three times
signs,
yesterday.
communication with another human being, I'm not used to this sort of thing.
Yeah. No, it's true. Because you know, I appreciate, I kind of rebelled against the system because in travelling from Liverpool Street to the Barbican, I thought I've got three or four options here. Number one, traditional hard copy London A to Z in hand. Option two, of course,
but you always go over the page, don't you, in those things?
Yeah, well, yeah. Exactly. You use the...
Yeah, run over by a bus, try to read the bloody thing.
Precisely. Option two, of course, use some kind of Google Map thing on your mobile phone.
Oh,
I'd get lost
exactly,
using that.
Yeah. Option three, actually ask. Ask human beings. Actually, to be fair, out of the three human beings who, when I left at Liverpool Street Station, I said, excuse me, can you tell me where Barbican is? One person muttered into his head, nothing
probably,
at all.
He probably thought he was going to an acid attack or something.
One person said, actually gave a very detailed sort of route for the whole thing, and a third person actually said, it's just the building over there. So, you know, two out of three, I thought was quite reasonable.
Exactly.
I remember when I was a very young man going down to Leicester Square to see, I think it was the premiere of Dr. No.
That's 1962, Ian.
Yeah,
that's 1962.
I was very young. Anyway, I walked into.
Ian's like, let's gloss over that.
1961? I walked into the foyer and got my ticket and went towards the doors to the cinema. And this chap dressed like an Argentinian general. So he leapt in front of me and said, allow me to do my job, sir. And I said, well, next time, do it a little bit quicker, will you? and the same week, on the same visit, I tried to buy a ticket for the tube, and I only had some coppers. And this idiot behind the desk said, I can only take a shilling or so of those, 12 pence, was it, a shilling as legal tender, you know. Has always done me a favour. I said, congratulations, you've reached your full potential at a very young age.
And that's the reason why Ian Lennox, and his adventures in London ended up with him working for the Daily Mail in Manchester.
Well, Lennox 2, London 0 it
was. Well, yeah, did you enjoy the movie when you gone into it? And was it the Odeon Leicester Square? Because that's where they used to hold the
premieres. Yes, that's right, yes. Yeah. I enjoyed it, yes.
Well, it's still standing.
Yeah, it was hilarious. One of the scenes in it was... The painting of the Duke of Wellington had been stolen at the time, and Bond, when he meets Dr. No, goes to his palatial premises, and there is the Duke of Wellington's portrait. But then we sort of laugh. Yeah. But what we didn't know is that the thing was only about 15 miles from where I lived, because somebody had nicked it and had it in his attic.
Your pitiful little island hasn't even been threatened, Mr. Bond.
That's it.
Honey Child Rider, of course, played with Vavavoom by
Ursula Andress.
Exactly. Yes, I thought you'd remember Ursula Andress.
Do you know that there were, it wasn't a terrific big budget, and the famous bikini she wore was her own bikini.
Yeah, well, you know, bring your own, effectively.
Fortunately,
you
had a good one, so...
Always good. I either that or use conch shells.
Sure,
I'd have to say the one disturbing aspect of Doctor No, I don't know if you've seen the movie yourself, Shaley, but it's the one where the tarantula spider effectively lands on Sean Connery, a.k.a.
Yeah.
James Bond's chest in an evening. And that's quite, you know, you go to sleep or you're sort of dozing off and you find that you've got a tarantula spider in your bed. It's not great. It's not a good healthy sign at all. So never mind.
I think it was a real tarantula, you know, that too.
Well, you know, Sean Connery didn't realise where he'd actually have, you know, contracts for various other things. Meanwhile, of course, Daniel Craig has okayed the greenlit that he will be back for a fifth James Bond.
Yeah, is it his fifth one, is it?
Yes, 13 years he
I'm
would
so
have played
over
Bond.
Daniel Craig being James Bond.
Yeah.
Am I the only one?
It's what he does, you see. Yeah. It's what Roger Moore did, it's what...
Timothy I'm ready Walton for Idris did. Elba now.
I'm having seen Idris Elba in Dark Tower recently.
Ooh. I've heard mixed things about
that. Yeah, and I'd have to agree.
I agree, actually. Idris Elba, he's got a sort of presence that's quite startling.
I loved him in Luther.
He was wonderful as Heimdall in the Thor movies.
Yes.
And he's very good as Heimdall, but somehow, in terms of the gunslinger, I don't know, doesn't quite... I think maybe it's because I felt, is this what we've come to, where the overlying theme seems to be Stephen King recommending that the solution to all our problems, more guns and bullets.
Yeah.
I just think there's a message there, not good.
Because this is the second one of his books that's been made into a film, is it?
Oh, Stephen King's had a lot of books.
Films. Yeah.
Lots and lots. Even as Richard Bach, he's, you know, prolific.
I've never been a King fan. Apologies.
Well, so it goes, or even Richard Bach. How are Ollie and Obo, Ian?
They've just breakfasted, if I can use that as a noun, an adjective, a verb, rather.
You just have your wordsmith, yeah. You can use it in whichever way you want.
And they've now gone out for, I don't know.
Are these cats?
Yes.
You mean you've never seen Ollie and Obo?
They've gone through the kefle, and they're out in the town.
I'm astounded, Shaley.
They're painting the town red.
You haven't actually sort of encountered the cats of... Maybe it's because actually, although you've become more regular on the breakfast sort of slots, you weren't around where we actually had those huge amounts of Ollie and Obo aspects in which...
I love the name Obo.
Does he play the violin
is
at
he,
all? Or
is he shaped like an Obo?
Yes. I never looked at it like that. No, he doesn't play the violin. I haven't got a violin, he probably could, mind. He can certainly meow for England.
Well, there's Obo there. Obviously, Obo already getting ready for a night on the town there.
No, he looks adorable.
With his dinner jacket and
cute.
A whole heap of other setups. Which is one of
his little white mittens.
Lots of scenarios of Ian, and indeed, this was the sort of piece 90 minutes after Ian's May 25th aspect, where I believe Ollie starts typing on the keyboards, which is definitely
Polish.
The way forward. In Polish, exactly. It's a whole new world. Anyway, Ian. Anything else, apart from obviously lots and lots of exercise, that we'd recommend as we begin to approach Dr. Justin Varney from Public Health England in the second part of the production today? Anything else you'd like us to add?
Apropos what? Exercise? I think one of my friends is a very, very keen yoga expert, really. Hmm. And I said, well, why do you do it? You know, because I get bored of stuff like that. He says, because when I get old, I want to be able to move without pain.
And I
think it's a compelling reason, actually.
Flexibility, that's the key thing.
Yeah.
I love this little update on Facebook from March 21st. Every morning, says Ian Lennox, I give my cats, Ollie and Obo, a big breakfast, and they wander off for a good lie down.
Yes, they happened this morning, though.
Obo goes out like a light, but Ollie always lies with his eyes only half closed. I think he's plotting to take over the Labour Party. Hey, everyone else is.
How insightful.
Exactly. This is a definite message on that sort of way. And how's the writing coming on, Ian? All well?
Arthur's given my latest tome, and he's plowing his way through it, I think. Mm-hmm. And I've basically written about 75 to 80,000 words in the third version. I have not written the concluding chapter yet. Or indeed polish sufficiently the penultimate chapter, but that's worked in probably addressed next week.
But you will, and I'm sure it'll be
then when Arthur comes off Arthur, I'm going to consider his opinions because he's very thorough.
Oh, exactly.
And he's obviously got a very good expert eye on writing because he's so successful at himself. And so probably sit down and think about it and go through tidying up things. Characters and stuff like that. And I'm hoping I'm aiming for October, I'm not going to give myself a strict deadline. I can put on the Kindle.
You can't hurry genius. You can't.
Can't hurry either.
having said that, Shaley, you still prefer the physicality of books, don't you?
I do indeed. I'm old school and an old fashioned like that.
A recent move that Shaley has been engaged with has seen her only lose just a few selections of her childhood books.
I shed a small tear.
But you're an avid reader of them, aren't you? Do you try and write children's books?
Oh, I tried to write a long time ago, but it's very difficult to write children's books, isn't it?
It
got half written and then thrown to one side.
Did you?
I'm sure. Who
knows? I might pick it up again.
Hmm? Yeah, there's thousands and thousands of people say they want to do this and they don't finish. But if you go halfway through it, perhaps it's still gestating inside you, and one day you'll pick up the quill pen and poof.
Indeed, yes, things will manifest in every way, shape or form. Okay, so if you're looking ahead to what's taking place as far as the Midweek Drive Morning News issue is concerned, we should be speaking to Dr. Justin Varney from Public Health England. We'll be speaking to Francis Pernessa from Network Rail about the excellent work they're doing in terms of trying to cope with people's staycations and substantial engineering works that's taking place over the bank holiday period. Eva MacDonald will be joining us, as indeed will Professor Fiona Moore. Mine, of course, this week sees another classic example of the Stone Tapes, which takes place this evening, just after 7 o'clock, on Siren 107.3 FM. That's Lincoln's first community radio station. Shaylee, would you like to put those last two questions to Ian Lennox, please?
Yes. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today, Ian?
I have indeed.
Oh, that's fantastic news.
It wasn't too upset, I think, about Newcastle. I mean, I tried to sort of ease away from...
Stop bringing it up! Stop reminding him!
You know what I had to endure yesterday, Alex? Far, far worse than Newcastle's defeat, was a drive down to Scarborough in torrential rain, and I mean torrential rain. Apparently, the Scarborough was flooded.
Yes.
We were blocked. The roads were, some of the roads were impassable. And it went on for about 2 hours. You could hear it drumming on the roof.
So why did you go to Scarborough then, Ian? I mean,
my two sisters would arrange to go and see my cousin. She lives down there.
Oh.
I quite like Scarborough.
Oh, yes, she's lovely. Yeah. Well, actually, she lives in a small village, about 2 or 3 miles north of Scarborough.
We do like to geek beside the seaside, as sci-fi Scarborough would actually go. So, wonderful.
So we had fish and chips on the shoreline.
Mm.
In the rain?
No, it stopped by this time. It basically stopped when we got there.
You brought the sun. Ian Lennox brought the Tarnside sun to Scarborough, and the world was happy as a result.
I don't think there was any hint of it in the forecast.
Mm, well, you know, where the forecast's getting it wrong. Who'd have thought it?
Getting it wrong.
Exactly.
Sorry about that. We missed the flood.
I take it you'll be back very soon?
Yes.
Good. Excellent. Well, we talked about it in the first hour. You heard it on the news there. And we continue with this theme that over 6 million adults are putting their health at risk. And to address some of the importance of actually having a brisk walk fairly regularly, we're delighted to welcome Dr. Justin Varney, National Lead for Adult Health from Public Health England. Good morning, Justin. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Thank you.
So clearly this is a matter of some concern in terms of exercise is good for you, laziness is not. And that lead figure, 4 out of 10 adults aged 40 to 16 in England walk less than 10 minutes continuously each month at a brisk pace, seems quite shocking. I mean, is this because it's not as though they're doing cycling, I presume.
No, I mean, I think one of the challenges is people are still walking. They're just not walking fast enough. And we know from the evidence that you need to be walking at about 3 miles an hour to have the impact for your heart health, for your brain, and to reduce the risk of diseases like cancer. And that's why we're launching the Active 10 app today, to help people get a better understanding of how fast is fast, and really reflecting on, are you getting that 10 minutes of continuous brisk walking that you need to improve your health?
We were speaking in the first part of the programme to Ian Lennox, who was sharing with us his comments about, well, what about yoga? Is that useful? Because clearly that's a much more sedentary form of exercise, etc. Or is it a case of, no, we should be brisk walking, that's the way forward?
Sure. I mean, the Chief Medical Officer's guidelines on physical activity are clear that what we should be doing is aiming for 150 minutes of moderate activity every week, or 75 minutes of vigorous activity. And we need to be doing muscle strengthening activity at least twice a week. And yoga is one of the forms of muscle strengthening activity that helps improve our bone strength and our muscle strength. But actually, brisk walking sits in that aerobic side of activity. And that's how we're impacting on our heart health and our brain health and getting the heart pumping a bit faster. I really want everyone in the country to be getting a little bit hot and sweaty every minute, every day for at least 10 minutes. And how you do it? I'm not that fussed. Everyone will find the thing that works for them. What we do know is that the people who are most inactive, who aren't achieving 30 minutes a week, 150 minutes sounds like climbing Everest or running the marathon, and they're not going to get there tomorrow. Starting with 10 minutes of brisk walking every day is something that pretty much all of us can do and can build into life without having to go to a gym or buy any special equipment. Simply open the front door and walk out.
Over to yourself, Shaley. I mean, you're clearly not in the 40 to 60 bracket, going in your young early 20s, but thoughts on this particular aspect? I mean, in terms of your views, were you shocked by the findings?
Not in particularly, purely because when I think about people that age, so that's my parents' generation, they've got access to cars, so people my age generally don't tend to have the disposable income to be able to purchase a car. So a lot of me and my friends will just walk everywhere, not necessarily as briskly as the doctor would like. But no, I can completely understand why that's happening. And also, like Ian was saying earlier, people are living longer, so it is going to be a drain
and
on
looking
our
at
resources.
Some of the other benefits, it would seem that as well as obviously you're reducing cardiovascular disease, you're also reducing dementia potentially and having a lower risk of type 2 diabetes. So it seems that the cost benefit ratio just seem to be sort of fairly self-evident. Do you get a sort of sense that people are just saying, oh, is this another case of being hectored into doing something which we don't want to do?
No, I think the reality is that most of us do walk every day, and when we ask people, you know, are you walking, most people say yes, and they often wave about their step counters. And then when they use the Active 10 app, there's this kind of light bulb moment of, I might be doing lots of steps, but I'm not doing them fast enough to improve my health. And when we talk about fast enough, this is not the kind of Nordic walking, semi-jogging pace. This is the kind of pace that you walk when you don't want to be late for a meeting. So you feel your heart moving a little bit faster, you feel a little bit warm, but you can still hold a conversation and you don't arrive there drenched in sweat.
Out of breath kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not even out of breath. It's just that bit of, you feel a little bit warmer, you do feel your heart racing a bit faster. And I think, you know, most of us can do that pretty easily. And one of the important things we've learned with the app, and we've been trialing it with a whole load of different groups of individuals, is particularly when we use it with people with conditions like diabetes, like heart failure, like chronic airways disease, where you know, they're nervous about exercise, about having things like a palpitation, etc. Walking is something that's really accessible, and it's something that they can do without a special instructor, without being in a clinic, and getting to this pace that's brisk, which is only 3 miles an hour, it's really not that fast, is achievable for most of us. The challenging bit in daily life is getting that 10 minutes of continuous walking, which we need to be doing. And that, again, is where the app helps. And when I first started using it, I do a lot of steps every day, but I suddenly realized, actually, I'm only really walking fast enough for 2 or 3 minutes here and 2 or 3 minutes there. So I have to make a conscious effort to get to that 10-minute block, which is what we need to be doing to get the health benefits.
NHS.uk/1U presumably is a good place to actually start off if you're looking to download the app and take it from there.
Definitely, and there's lots of other information on the 1U website as well about other forms of physical activity that can support people. You can also find it in the App Store for iPhones or for Android phones as well. It's free, it's there to be used, give it a go.
Shaley, any final thoughts?
Yeah, my mum, in terms of exercise, she reverts back to sort of caveman. She said there was no gyms back in the caveman time, so just walk everywhere. And I guess I sort of live by that as well in terms of walking everywhere. But I never knew that you had to walk briskly. I will bear that in mind now, Dr. Justin.
And two final questions, effectively. In terms of the overall system, Justin, have you had a reasonably interesting, fairly brisk interview today? Has it been okay for you?
It's been excellent, thank you. And I hope, I think that the comments from your colleague really resonate with me as well about actually walking, getting around walking is cheaper, it's generally more effective, and you enjoy life a little bit more. You connect with the community that you live in. So get out the front door and explore a bit.
Dr. Justin Varney, National Lead for Adult Health from Public Health England. We salute you. Take care now.
Thanks.
So it's very much focused on the 21st century. But looking at some of the figures that we have released by Network Rail today, we have 98% of British folk surveyed intend to stay in the UK this bank holiday Monday, with a third of folk saying they don't make plans until the day itself. Now, allowing for the investment that the rail companies are actually working in, there's an interesting sort of challenge here. And to address some of the findings of this research, we're delighted to be able to welcome the fantastically talented Francis Pernessa. Francis, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much, Alex, and thank you for that kind introduction.
Very good. Now, talk to us about some of the sort of issues here, because clearly one of the overriding fears that I think people have is I cannot be facing all the rail traffic and travel and challenges that we've got on the roads, etc., this bank holiday. I'm just going to stay at home.
And that's true. That's what our research has said to us. It says that around 58% of people are going to be staying at home, most of those citing heavy traffic as being the reason why they won't go out, and about a quarter saying it's actually just too expensive to travel at the bank holiday weekend. Mm. Our concern as Network Rail is the 33% of people who are going to make their plans at the last minute. We've got a huge programme of investment, £133 million of investment in the railway happening over the bank holiday weekend. Most of the network is opened, but certain parts and key stations will be suffering some heavy disruption. And we're really urging people to plan ahead and to make good time for their travel.
Which is something which, again, seems eminently sensible, and as the managing director of infrastructure projects at Network Rail, clearly you'd say yes, of course they do, but human beings being what they are, they tend not to do that. So despite sort of sessions like this going out and working through that process, and of course Lincoln is actually sort of blessed with the steampunk weekend that's taking place, so there'll be sort of people coming into the city and all sorts of other aspects within that. How can people find out about, you know, whether their journey's likely to be affected, what's the best route forward, and indeed that planning ahead?
So the best place for your listeners is to go to nationalrail.co.uk, and all of the information will be there. It'll be live. They'll be able to find out exactly what trains are available, whether there's any unplanned disruption on the network as well. And if they do that now, they'll be able to travel well at the weekend.
Looking towards the stations that are going to be affected, have you got obviously the sort of notions of what are the main stations that are likely to be taken out of the system or will be sort of impacted by this work?
Indeed. To be honest, the major impact is around London. So we've got Euston Station closed over the weekend. Waterloo Station has been going through a major upgrade over the last three weekends. So commuters have been well used to the reduced service that we have there. Big programme at Thameslink. With London Bridge in its final phase before it opens at Christmas. And on the Great Eastern Main Line to Chelmsford and Colchester into London, again, a lot of work. But in the north, we have a blockade at Bolton for electrification works. We're electrifying the Chase Line in Stafford. We're working in Scotland. We have about 3,089 work sites across 438 projects just this weekend. So a huge programme of work. All the information at nationalrail.co.uk.
Allowing for the cliche that used to be used, no pain, no gain. We've heard about the pain. The gain presumably will be an improved infrastructure and one which eventually will mean that passengers' journeys will actually be a lot easier in future, presumably.
That's right. And the gain is coming soon. So London Bridge will be open at the end of the year. The trains will come at the end of 2018. At Waterloo, we'll see a 30% capacity increase with new trains at Christmas. The Crossrail services are starting, electric services starting at Edinburgh, Glasgow, around Manchester, around Oddsall Cord, again, electric services. And by 2019, we will have added 170,000 new commuter seats, which would be the equivalent of a three-lane traffic jam from London to Cardiff. So a huge amount of people coming off the road onto rail. Rail's a real success story, but we need to make that investment now.
And in terms of people who are going to be travelling in and out of those affected stations, whether it's Bolton, whether it's the London Bridge and so on, would you simply just return to that notion of, well, you think very much about, is the journey absolutely essential? If you do have to sort of go over this weekend, are there alternative ways you can reroute yourself?
Well, the thing I would stress is that 95% of the network is open as normal. It's open for business. Yes, there are huge blocks of work happening in very discrete locations, but I think certainly in your area, you'll find much of the network open and you can find all of that information out online.
Were there any figures that surprised you when you were looking at the overall line? I mean, the fact that 37% say they don't make plans until the day, presumably looking at the weather, and also 26% of people, or over a quarter, sort of felt that going away is too expensive. Or was it just a case of, well, that's what British people do?
Well, there is a bit of that. I mean, we work hard before every bank holiday with our Check Before You Travel campaign. It's a national campaign. We try to make it very relevant and meaningful to people. But a third, leaving it to the last minute, is the part that concerns us. And I can imagine people waiting to see what the weather will do. We don't want to ruin that spontaneity. So that's why we're asking people to check now and to make, at least, if not plans, at least look at their options for the bank holiday weekend.
Are there ever any times, Francis, when as managing director of infrastructure projects, you look at the project and you think, "Well, that's a big one. That's," and you take out, you have to take several gulps before you actually sort of say, "We're going to put this into practice."
Well, either fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, we have any number of those large projects. As my team are delivering over £6 billion of new infrastructure this year, it's around £120 million a week, £12,000 a minute of every single day, and they're all big projects. 22% of all UK infrastructure is being delivered by Network Rail.
That's almost the equivalent of Neymar's annual salary, but still, we don't talk about that. Finally, final place to go to is to remind people where the best online site to go to is, Francis, for finding out further information and details.
It is nationalrail.co.uk.
Francis Pianessa, Chief Operating Chief Operating Officer and Managing Director of the Infrastructure Projects at Network Rail. Many thanks indeed. Take care there.
Thank you very much.
Honestly, you think one would actually get the right title for the individual. Do you travel by rail and network and otherwise, Tessa Snart?
I do sometimes.
Oh. Currently, of course... Yeah, well, exactly. Currently, of course, she's currently waiting for her car to have its MOT done, which is wonderful.
Right?
I am. So, I didn't know you had a car, Tessa. Oh. What car do you have? You know, and does it have a name?
It does have a name. It's a Vauxhall Corsa, and she's named Loretta after Loretta Lynn, the country.
Of course she is. I wouldn't expect anything less from you, Tessa.
And not indeed the science fiction artist Loretta Sansour, who, of course, has her exhibition exhibiting at the Barbican, which we'll talk about in a few moments. and do you travel by train, Shaylee?
Only occasionally, like, for instance, going down to London, purely because it makes more sense than driving. Driving London
that?
Is horrendous.
But I actually drove to London yesterday. And I tend to drive to just outside a place called Snaresbrook and then take the journey from there. Tessa's actually taken that journey with me, actually.
Oh, wow.
Very good.
I remember.
Yeah, so she tries to block it out of memory, but it exciting news as far as Sound and Country Vision is concerned. It's an anniversary edition. In fact, the anniversary is proving to be so big, we're going to have to run it over two shows.
Nice. Yes. Congrats, Tessa.
We can't just have like one show because too many people responded positively. They've got too many pieces of music to run through, so we're going to have two programs.
I'm happy that they're going to be back on the show. So.
Well, it was either that or we'd have to sort of squeeze it to the extent of just giving them about 30 seconds each. It would be pointless, really.
Yeah, it wouldn't even be worth it.
Exactly,
yeah.
I was thinking that this morning. I started to panic and because I had somebody else respond today and I completely forgot about that artist. And I was like, oh, goodness, yes, I messaged them. So, yes. Two parts is definitely needed.
And the kind of correspondence that she was having at midnight last night with Chloe and various other folks, who knows, it was just going on and on, 9, 10 o'clock in the evening. It's phenomenal.
Dedicated.
Really.
It's
like social media crazy.
Yeah.
I made this event page and some of the artists have met each other. Some of us travelled over to Nashville and met the artists over there. So it's kind of like a little reunion for them as well.
It's like a big family.
It's quite nice. So I didn't realise that some of them knew each other and had met each other. And
We even have the potential return of Camo from Nashville.
Miss Camo.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, I know.
He wanted to do other things, so he thought, fair enough, you know, it's probably personal, but then might.
Let him free.
It'll be splendid.
If you love him, you'll let him go.
Exactly. That's been our motto that we've worked through from there. So how much exercise do you do on a daily basis, Tessa? Because we've just been focusing on...
I feel like Tessa is one of those that's going to be really active.
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you say that. I'd like to be more active than I am, but honestly, working at TK Maxx is like going to the gym every day.
It's manual labour, basically.
Other stores are available, obviously. But yeah. Just get that shameless public promotional thing in from that sort of perspective. She says it's by accident.
Do you know I work at TK Maxx?
Well,
have you heard of TK Maxx? It's, we get it. You work at TK Maxx.
Exactly. It's deliberate.
Well, I was in a very early shift yesterday, and we have 94... boxes of delivery. It took us 4 hours to get through it, or lifting boxes and putting things out. Literally, you're running up and down the stairs. So,
That's a lot of overseas labour that's gone into those 94 boxes. Yeah.
It is.
Amazing.
You're constantly on the go. But I like to be on the go anyway.
Well, that's the important thing. And of course, next week it looks as though Tessa will be back together with yourself, Shaylee, for the midweek drive between 5 and 7.
I look forward to seeing you, Tessa.
Yeah, and I look forward to seeing you too.
Tease ahead to that, of course, we'll be featuring Louise Harrison, who is the sister of George Harrison. And Shaylee, you have the book.
Wow. I'm going to peruse the book and make some notes.
My Kid Brothers, band, etc., written by Louise Harrison. Lovely biographical details. So I'll be there. Philip Leonis will be with us as well. That's assuming he survived the excitements of Disneyland.
Yeah. I'm so jealous. Well, is it his nephew that he's going with?
No, I think so. A godson.
Wish I was his godson. I'd be at Disney right now.
That sort of place of happiness that's certainly there. Eva MacDonald is still working in Skegness, and her phone doesn't seem to be functioning at all. So,
So
we thought we'd move through that whole process. But we will be featuring Professor Fiona Moore, all being well. Tessa, anything else you'd like to sort of share with us in terms of the waiting for the actual car MOT? I mean, there's always that tension thing. Have you submitted the car? Is it just a case of you just waiting and see now?
I am. I'm literally just having a walk around the beautiful village of Maxley, which is about 10 minutes up the road from Glinton.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite intense. I'm just waiting. Obviously, we've had the Retta now for 3 or 4 years. She's done us proud, got us from A to B, and hopefully everything's still well with her, but we'll soon find out.
Oh, that's right. In fact, you're quite right. It was Loretta as opposed to Larissa, which is
very
important.
Her name really doesn't match the sort of car she is, because she actually looks quite sporty with the black alloys and the sort of tinted lights, because that's how she was when we got her. So Loretta really, she's not a country pumpkin. But I have to pick that name. I have to pick a name that sort of related to me as well. So
no, I like it. It's a good name. Car.
Message from Eva MacDonald. I am not able to pick up your call for some reason! My phone is not letting me accept it, which is very strange. That has never happened before. Well, there's always a first time.
It has happened in Glinton, though. Remember?
That might have been...
I think it's the universe telling us something, Alex.
Or I might have been dialing the wrong number. I don't
again.
Know. Exactly. Who knows what could actually happen. So in terms of car-themed aspects or car-themed automobile stuff, I mean, clearly we've got Chasing Cars by Snow Patrol. We could have Carly Simon. No, I can't believe I even said that. We could actually have Driving in My Car, Madness.
You wouldn't happen to have Rascal Flatts' Life is a Highway, would you?
No.
If not, Madness.
I think that's a fairly
everything relates to country with Tessa. It's like a running theme.
I know.
That's why Sound and Country Vision is moving on. Yeah, no, very good. I mean, and again, the selection of tunes that we're going to be putting together for next week is going to be quite phenomenal. You know, in every sense of the word. So it's great stuff.
I'm working on the schedule.
Well, I mean, dedicated to Loretta in any way, shape, or form, and indeed any MOT cars. So let's face it, you might sort of be feeling unloved if GC. SE results day are sort of through. You think, but what about my sort of car? What do we work our way through that? Clearly, if you just got your GCSEs, you're too young to drive, so don't worry about that. But I'm still thinking,
nearly there, though.
Exactly. Life will continue. Exactly, and that's what we'd like to hear. You know, Tessa's official good luck message. Yay!
Definitely.
Now start the engine.
Round the clock, I also had a little knock. I didn't low-tea pop and a late night. Maswell Hill. I've even been to Selsey-ville. I drove along the A45. I had a rat 258. This copper stopped me the other day. You'll mistake, what could I say? The tyres were a little worn. They were okay, I could have sworn. I like driving in my car. I'm satisfied I've got this car.
Sound of the 20th century in the 21st century with Suggs and the rest of the Nutty Boys and Madness. We have left a second message on the Eva MacDonald answer phone. We know it's her answer phone because she said, hi, this is Eva MacDonald. And I've also suggested that if she wishes to try the option of calling us, she might like to try that as well. But who knows? You know, it's, I mean, you can see the correspondence
technology
that we've actually
nowadays.
Had there, Shaley. It's quite astounding in terms of where things are going. And, you know, we try, but sometimes we fail. And nevertheless, you know, how else can progress become established if we don't actually sort of take a few moments to sort of work our way through that whole sequence? Should we actually, I mean, we could always leave a joint message with the aforementioned Eva MacDonald, who is apparently in Skegness, which is probably reason why she can't actually sort of reach us, because getting out from Skegness can be a challenge in itself, really. But let's just see whether we're getting any sign whatsoever. Well, it is ringing, you see, but then again, it's been ringing before, so it's see what happens in this respect. It's very exciting. She might, of course, answer.
This is where she answers.
Yes, yeah. So we've been working away through that process. No, nothing as yet. Much exciting though it is to actually listen to an answer thing ringing. Not even getting the voicemail at this stage. Ah.
This is Eva MacDonald. Please leave your message after the tone. To re-record your message, press hash at any time.
So there we are, Shaley. It is clearly the Eva MacDonald voicemail that we're leaving this message on. Any message you'd like to share with, because you had a theory in terms of why she might not have been able to actually answer it. It's all to do with the smartphone and having difficulty with that.
Yeah, so if you have an iPhone, sometimes you can't swipe the button and there's no other way to answer a phone call, which is very frustrating, Apple. Sort it out. But yeah, so if you do have an iPhone, Eva, throw it in the Skegness waters now.
Obviously, we wouldn't necessarily say that's full recommendation, but at least we feel in some way, shape or form he's part of the production. And meanwhile, Eva MacDonald, I'm sure Skegness is producing some wonderful stuff and you'll be doing some wonderful, entertaining ambassadorial duties there.
Do you want to live? You want to try? You hear the whisper. whisper of the world outside. So take a chance and leave tonight. Sarah's waiting in the car outside. A bolted door, your father waits. You let your anger and your sadness break.
From the 19th century cabinet of curiosities to the vastness of space, through future cities into the inner landscapes of human perception, uncover the mysterious lands of Jules Verne and Ray Harryhausen, where science fiction narratives first took root. Venture on an odyssey into our solar system with vintage artwork promoting Soviet visions of space alongside immersive work by Soda Jerk. Visit a gallery of aliens and stand alongside iconic spacesuits from a galaxy of blockbusters, including Star Trek and Interstellar. Imagine dystopian worlds with Margaret Atwood and 28 Days Later. Then, with nowhere left to explore but human consciousness, delve deep and experience the transformation and mutation of the body through the eyes of Jack Kirby and Ex Machina. Curated by historian and writer Patrick Geiger, a festival-style exhibition consists of more than 800 works, many of which have never been seen in the UK before. Continuing across the Barbican Centre, including artwork from Isaac Julian, Larissa Sansour and Conrad Shawcross, and an installation from the creators of Black Mirror. That was what I was doing yesterday, but in essence, we wanted to keep balance in terms of these sort of things, so rather than actually go around as a duo with Professor Fiona Moore, I said, well, I'll go first, and then Fiona went afterwards. It's just the way things happen. And then we could compare notes. And I think it's fair to say, Fiona, we gave it a double thumbs up to Into the Unknown at the Barbican.
Oh, I'd definitely say yes. It wasn't absolutely perfect, but it was certainly one of the better exhibitions I've seen. You know, there's some really interesting rare pieces. It was surprisingly comprehensive, you know, taking in things like Afrofuturism and Bollywood film as well as the Western canon. And yeah, as you said, the Eastern Europe was quite well represented. There's some lovely artwork there.
And in terms of the Shawcross installation, that was the one which, for me, I have to say, was a little bit unusual in terms of the henge elements of the machine there. That was one which didn't quite sort of score too solidly from my sort of perspective, but nevertheless, well worth accessing.
I think it's one of these your mileage may vary things. It was, for the benefit of your listeners, a piece of kind of interactive modern art, you know, a mobile sculpture that you could kind of walk around, walk into, see from different angles. And it was interesting. When I saw it, I just kind of I got on the platform, basically walked into it in a spiral. You know, I just kind of followed the paths into the center and out again. But as I was doing that, I could see what other people were doing. It was interesting. You know, some people would kind of come in, take one look, and basically go, and walk out. Other people were getting more into it. There was one guy who was just taking pictures from every angle with his smartphone, you know, just going in there. And a lot of people were doing what I was doing, you know, sort of walking in, walking out, and, spending a few minutes looking at it. But it was interesting seeing how different people reacted to it.
Mm. Well, having spent the morning perusing the full official guide to Into the Unknown, we have Shaylee McKenzie. Shaylee, your thoughts on whether or not in the remaining few days of this exhibition, because it closes, of course, at the Barbican on September 1st, you'd say, yes, that sounds as though it's one for me.
Oh,
Yeah, no, definitely. Obviously, it closes very soon, so if this sounds like something that you guys would be interested in, get yourselves down there. I'm really, really jealous that Fiona and Alex got to go, because... Looking through the book, it looks amazing.
Indeed it was, but as yet, you know, we always like to sort of counterbalance this, and if we look at The Guardian, one of the columnists who actually, one of the comments that was made here is as follows. As a die-hard sci-fi fan, I just paid nearly £30 for this experience. Well, he should only pay £14.50, that's the bottom line, so he's wrong.
Ooh, I wonder if they scammed him, because they knew he was from The Guardian.
The experience, quote-unquote, wasn't unlike walking into a junk shop, junk everywhere, no thread, no immersive experience, just sheer and utter junk piled high like a geek's bedroom. Clips blared from everything from Wonder Woman to Moon to Afrocentric space funk. It was like an acid trip, only a very bad one. Perhaps your bag, and this is where I thought he'd lost all credibility with Fiona, perhaps your bag, YOU'RE.
Oh dear.
Who edited that? It is
The Guardian, but good still, Lord. You know, is wandering through, five screens,
write in.
Showing disjointed clips of mainstream sci-fi related films and TV and music, while glass cabinets house tons and tons of junk, cheap paperbacks, masks, toys, postcards, plastic aliens and suits.
Clearly is not an appreciator, is he?
Once through the junkyard, you're rushed into the next zone, a nonsensical, navel-gazing experimental film that lasted 25 minutes, which I will never get back. The last zone was a robotic arm with a light attached and a soundtrack of scary sounds. We left the last one, and I was put in mind of a fictional comic, Do Not Go to This Danger, Danger.
Oh, my goodness.
The official line that The Guardian took was, as the world burns and our sense of a coming apocalypse grows, writers and filmmakers are turning once again to other planets, but we can't help but look back too. Dinosaurs used to be a metaphor, a means of addressing our most deep-seated fears. They roared and we trembled, we fought them to win. Now, though, they bring with them a prelapsarian longing. As Gurney has it on the back of a triceratops, we long companionably to ride. And again, one of the lines that was there, all you can do is to try and enjoy the spectacle of it all, saving any questions for Google once you get home. I did like the line that the writer had actually put in the Observer at this particular aspect. On a bad day, the Barbican can itself resemble Nostromo, the labyrinthine starship of Alien. The installation that we're talking about is actually on -2, floor -2.
Wow.
Floor zero, floor -1, floor -2. And this was, of course, Conrad Shawcross' Light of the Machine. I felt, again, Fiona, listening to those comments, and we're just, for reasons of balance, clearly that's one of the things about science fiction, actually human beings in general. When they've got an axe to grind, they certainly have an axe to grind, don't they?
Yeah, really. You know, it's sort of listening to some of them, I'm like, well, you know, kind of, if you didn't enjoy it, I'm sorry, but, you know, kind of...
move on from it.
Exactly.
Don't dwell on it. Don't write an A4 page about
precisely.
It.
Another little line here. I have to admit that Mr. Spock's spacesuit from Star Trek the Motion Picture left me underwhelmed. For all that's there's surely a PhD thesis to be written on why tangerine remains sci-fi's favourite colour.
Does it?
The colour of danger?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, I think there have been other sites, you know, other areas from that perspective.
Dark blue is always an interesting colour in sci-fi.
Mm.
Very ominous.
Mm, mm, mm.
It may be that, I mean, it was popular in 70s sci-fi because it was a popular colour in the 70s, you know. It may just be that... they were looking at a lot of 70s stuff.
Yeah.
But
on a day and a week, sadly, where we have to... Well, we celebrate the transition of Brian Aldiss from this little particular plane of existence to another plane of existence. It was nice to see that the article leads with the most brilliant definition of science fiction comes courtesy of the writer Brian Aldiss, who once described it as hubris clobbered by nemesis. At Into the Unknown, the Barbican's ambitious new exploration of sci-fi's vast realm, there is certainly hubris. The claims made for it, unprecedented, genre-defying, are nothing if not grand, but alas, you'll find no vengeful gods at work. Ultimately,
didn't they see the section on apocalypses.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, ultimately, what club is the exhibition, a repository for some 800 images, books, comics, models and costumes, is the rather more prosaic conviction of its curator, the Swiss historian Patrick Geiger, that size trumps all. Charmed as I was to see, among other things, the Spindrift supersonic transport miniature from the TV series Land of the Giants, I was struck by the way that it, and pretty much everything on display, was expected to speak for itself. Where was the historical background? What about those who've never seen Land of the Giants in all its 60s glory? Its subversions, such as they are surely of a piece with that decade's politics. The goodies Geiger has gathered are undoubtedly piled high, but they're so unmediated as to be almost meaningless at times. He has delivered the sci-fi equivalent of supermarket sweep.
See, my understanding of sci-fi is that it's not meant to be pristine and, like, sectioned off, and sci-fi's messy.
I'll nail my colours to the mask. I enjoyed it overall.
Yeah, it looked really good.
But it's interesting if you're listening to that and reading, obviously, the comments that have been made, and I've seen other sort of areas as well. It's again the polarity of this side of things. It's like the fight between Whovians and Trekkers.
Is there one?
Well,
I hadn't heard.
Oh, there's been some, and don't get me started on the Blake 7 people, because, you know, where there were emissions. I think no liberator there. Outrageous. Are you still sticking with it being a 7 out of 10, Fiona, or would you go higher, having had a day to sort of reflect
on it? Yeah, kind of. I mean, some of those comments were a little WTF. I mean, especially the ones that said that. You know, there wasn't a logic to it, because I could see, there's an obvious logic to it. Mm. You know, it's organized into sections. But I think actually one thing that's coming out, one thing I know from writing papers is that if the reviewer makes a comment that you're sort of like, the reviewer is blind, it's all in there. Maybe that means you haven't signposted it enough. And it actually kind of chimes with one of the things I thought about it, which was that it could have done in places with a bit more explanation.
Hmm.
I mean, at one point, I remember I was looking at the films and kind of, missed seeing the title of one of them. So I asked one of the attendants, whether there was a plaque, listing the films in the montage. And she basically said, no, but if you buy the catalogue, there's a list. And it's like,
It was only £35 for the catalogue. I know, I treated myself at the whole thing. It's a nice coffee table.
But at least you've got it, yeah.
Well, I am denied, but yes.
That's probably a way for them to make more money then. Mm. Rather than having it out there on a plaque, you had to buy the book and then you were able to use the book as you went along.
Although I wouldn't really want to go through the exhibition with that particular book, though. I think
it is quite large.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You'd need like a small pamphlet.
Exactly,
something.
Exactly. So, interesting. Another sort of comment here, which is kind of, I suppose, midway through this addressing of itemising things. If putting everything into context means writing lengthy captions aside each exhibit, then I'm happy that they didn't. Personally, I didn't find that there was a lack of explanations, and I appreciated the thematic arrangement. My only criticism is that the curve, although a fascinating location with its elongated shape, is perhaps too small on this occasion, turning out crammed with objects and visitors. But the show is captivating, full of beautiful illustrations, drawings and covers. Again, he goes on to talk about a response that science fiction is not primarily textual effects. Science fiction narrative is primarily textual, but the visual arts have been as much important as literature in defining the genre.
Yeah. Well, as I was going to say, I think the problem is, when you're doing an exhibition like this, it's hard to strike a balance.
Yeah.
Between something that's, the aficionados are going to basically go, oh, yeah, and the new people aren't going to go, huh. I mean, one issue with the British Library's similar exhibition a couple of years ago was that it kind of, assumed, it basically skewed a bit too hard towards the newcomer to the field. But I think possibly this one did kind of go a bit too far in the other direction. Because, I mean, again, you don't need lengthy captions and all that. But I'm just thinking I was going, Harryhausen. But it's entirely possible that somebody who just kind of came in out of curiosity might be going, why are all these dinosaur pictures around? And what have they got to do with Jules Verne? And possibly just kind of a brief explanation, Ray Harryhausen, he was this guy, he did this, you don't have to give a full, detailed biography just to make sure that everybody is on board.
Do you think that Geiger just presumed that everybody would have this sort of background knowledge already who went
well,
there?
That's what I'm saying. I'm thinking he's assuming that his audience are
already there,
generally pretty well informed about science fiction, you know, and this is probably the case for, you know, a lot of the audience, but it might not be the case for all of it.
Everyone,
and,
you
know, it would be, and also, you know, people, even if you're a big science fiction fan, you know, you might be coming with a friend or a relative or whatever who's not. It'd be nice to engage them as well.
Yeah, definitely.
But overall, well worth taking the opportunity.
Oh, definitely well worth it.
If you'd like to actually sort of make your way to the Barbican, again, it runs until the 1st of September, so hours are literally counting down. You can go to the barbican.org.uk website and find the tickets from that perspective. And again, hats off to the efficiency, because I use the traditional method, Fiona, of actually getting them to post my ticket to me.
Nice.
Wow.
Very good from a sort of point of view. In fact, I'll just sort of withdraw it now, pointing out the Barbican envelope and the ticket there, which, as you can see and confirm, Shirley, has had ticks on Area 1, Area 5 and Area 6.
Yeah, nice.
In terms of those sort of sequences, it's one to be treasured from that particular perspective.
Oh, they're like in the shape of like a rocket, little planet.
Exactly. You've even got you've got general customised stamps that have actually gone there. You've got Saturn, you've got Time, you've got wonderful stuff from that point of view. Fiona, we haven't asked for quite some time now, and clearly the listener is keen to find out, how are Zhukov and Aisha?
Oh, they're good. I'm in the office at the moment.
Oh,
and,
right.
Aisha, well, the home office, and Aisha is currently guarding me.
Territorial.
Well, yep, sitting on the sofa, making sure I don't escape. Zhukov is under the bed. He's got a... we've got a cat bed under there shaped like a Russian hat, and naturally, having a Russian name, he does love his Russian hat.
It's warm.
Whereas up in Newcastle-on-Tyne, as we found out earlier, Aldie and Obo, Ian's cats, they've just gone left.
Pacing the town red.
Exactly. They've had their breakfast, they've sorted things out, they're out and about, basically, sort of saying, the fog on the Tyne is all thine, fog on the Tyne is all thine. A reminder, of course, you can also find some, I mean, again, in terms of lacunae and gaps in the exhibition for Into the Unknown, very saddened to see no Magic Bullet productions there. I really had thought that they would have had a few sort of aspects from that perspective. Next time round, clearly, we're going to have words with Patrick Geiger and make sure that our Magic Bullet productions are fully represented, because, you know, the importance that the company's actually had in terms of science fiction stuff cannot be underestimated.
Yes, indeed.
Add to that Telos Productions as well. And in case if you are interested in terms of checking out David J. Howe Soundstone, they may be in Lincoln today, just ahead of the Steampunk Festival. They may be seeing...
I was going to say, I peg them as, like, steampunk people.
Yeah, maybe that, but I think...
Especially Sam.
They may well be checking out Valerian and the Thousand Planets, which...
Oh, don't you make me jealous. I really want to see it.
I thoroughly enjoyed
it. Yeah, I've got to see it too.
Yeah, I mean, very few people have, Fiona.
I love Luc Besson.
Yeah, very few people have gone to go
like
and see
it. Yeah, I love Valerian. You know,
he's
grew up on the comics when I was little, and so you know, I think the one sort of doubt I have is that the actors they've got playing Valerian and Laureline look a bit off body. But you know, presumably the studio had their own ideas about who they wanted in
what
the role.
To do,
so you know, I'll just have to see. And you know, if they disappoint, well, you know, I'm pretty sure. The rest of the film will be brilliant, you know, so just sit back and enjoy the aliens.
Just literally watching that opening sequence with David Bowie's Space Oddity as we go from the Soyuz Apollo meetup in 1973 to the far distant future is worth the price of the admission ticket alone. But I have to say, Cara Delevingne, I think, does very well. And Dane...
I'm enjoying her little soiree into movie world.
Well, exactly. She is Enchantress.
It's always a bit touch and go when, you know, like, models try and reach out into different...
I think I've seen, you know, generally. But, you know, I mean,
We're just losing you there momentarily, Fiona. I think we got a few bits of these. I think we're okay now.
But I'm saying, you know, if you Google the comics, you know, and have a look at what Laureline looks like in the comics, you know, she basically looks like Jane Fonda is what she looks like, you know,
Barbarella.
And it's you know, more or less the same era, you know, very Möbius influenced.
Yep.
And so you know, if you and Cara Delevingne, you know, as I said, I'm sorry, she just doesn't have the look. you know.
Well, I was pleasantly surprised, Fiona, but, you know, that's clearly something we can talk about, given that Richard Fitzwilliams has ignored Valerian, despite my protestations that he should actually sort of focus on that. He's completely ignored it.
I don't feel like it's his thing.
Yeah, we'll look to sort of get that sorted through in the very near future, and we'll get Fiona's views when she's considered opinion on Valerian and the Thousand Planets, City of a Thousand Planets.
It's always really interesting when a director takes a passion project and, like, makes it into a movie, because it's something that's very close to his heart.
Particularly when he made The Fifth Element, of course.
Yes,
and people
definitely.
Said, why don't you just make Valerian? In French, of course, but still.
Yeah.
Life continues. Fiona, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
Oh, I've had a very nice telephonic link. Thank you very much.
Excellent. That's right. Well, we will continue to celebrate the joys of Into the Unknown, as we said. I think we'll put that up and say, there we are. That's our particular viewpoint. Ignore the naysayers. You know, just don't fret about social media. And I'm still impressed with the fact that yesterday, of the three Londoners I spoke to asking me, when I asked them, where is the Barbican? Two out of three gave me correct directions. One just muttered, which is fine. It makes perfect sense. So it's good to see that, you know, civilization continues ever onwards. So will you be back with us again in the very near future?
Certainly, whenever you like.
Yee! Excellent stuff. And as we sort of head out of the programme today, I see it's going to be Chariots of Fire and Vangelis, following Take That, which is just wonderful. We thank Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Dr. Justin Varney. Interestingly, Fiona, do you strike me as somebody who walks briskly about 3 miles an hour for at least 10 minutes every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there we are. I see. I thought
she's
was sorted through on that sort of basis. And thanks.
Maggie
Stillwell for her EY Careers. And Francis Pianessa from, of course, Network Rail, just talking about staycations, various other bits and pieces. That's it. We're almost out of here now. Can we all say bye-bye? A one, a two, a three.
Bye.
Bye-bye.